Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Tathagata, by chanting Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa Yesterday we had, I think, it was yesterday, wasn't it? Day before yesterday, we had an amazing ceremony, the Vaspinkam, the invitation to rain retreat. And I think, I would like to take a moment to actually explain something here. And I think this invitation phrase that all our devotees, every non-upasampada monk got to chant. I think that was one of the most powerful messages anyone could say. So for those of you who may not have been here, we had the invitation rain retreat, and in this rain retreat, our devotees, Anagarika, Anagarika, Sita Shavika, Shavikas, and Siluesis, and everyone got together, and we invited the high ordained monks to stay in the temple, in the monastery, for 3 months and practice their path. But not only that, while you practice your path, may you help us go further as well. Because something that we have to remember is, yeah, that day was Esala Poya. Now, Esala Poya is one of the most significant poyas to have ever been on this entire earth, throughout its entire history. Why was that? That was the day the Buddha first opened his mouth and preached the first Dhamma Sutra, the Dhamma Chakkapavattana Sutra. I remember when, you know, I got to learn these, right? While coming as a monk, and after many, many, you know, times, I get to learn about, you know, how amazing the Dhamma is. And that was the first day the Dhamma was preached. The first day that the Four Noble Truths came into this world, were revealed to this world. And not only that, that was the start of the sasana. Why? Kondanya became Anya Kondanya, meaning the first sotapanna. And from that moment onwards, one after the other, after the other, after the other, the Buddha sasana grew and grew and grew and grew until the moment, we met our teacher. And then the sasana was passed on. Guru Hanur preached. Nayakanur preached. We listened. And now we're part of that as well. You know, each and every one of us, bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, upasaka, upasaka, we're all part of the sasana that started on Esala Poya Day 2,500 plus years ago. The Buddha opened his mouth and preached the Dhamma. And I think we're so lucky, and every week, I know, I remind you how lucky you are, because your lives are the most luckiest lives ever. To be able to hear the Dhamma in the entire history of our entire samsaric journey, we're very blessed, at least in this one, to have met or to have been born in the era of the Gautama Samma Sambuddha. To not only have been born in the time of the Buddha, but being in the time where the Dhamma is so alive Not only that, that we have a teacher. Not only that, we also have, you know, personal teachers. A teacher dedicated to help us progress on our path. So literally, when I was there, sitting down, hearing, you know, all of you chant, you know, in the 3 months period, stay in the monastery, reside in the monastery, contemplate, practice your path, and help us practice as well. The first thing that came to my mind is, you know, this is the sasana. This is the true sum of the sasana. Passing down what? Buddha pujas, Bodhi pujas. No, the sasana is dependent on the Dhamma. Passing down Dhamma from one to another. I think the Vaspingkama, or this invitation to Rain Tree, was an event which I really enjoyed. You know, I'm not someone who really likes going on, you know, ceremonial proceeding and doing all this. But I really did enjoy the Vaspingkama because it's a time where I can truly reflect. It's a time where you can truly reflect on the importance. So this is the thing, I really wanted to show you this because it was a time where I felt immense amount of joy. And I felt immense amount of being very fortunate to be part of a Sambuddha Sasana. So I want you to also feel fortunate. Because Sambuddha Sasana is not about a robe, not about a bald head. Sambuddha Sasana is about the Dhamma. Anicca Dukkha Anatta, three words that in the entire history of the universe were not heard of. You know, and yet we get to hear Anicca every hour you hear Anicca. Even before you fall asleep, you hear what? You know, in your dream you hear Anicca. Dukkha, Anatta. We're surrounded by it. Three words that in the history of the universe were unheard of. Were the rarest three words we get to hear every single day. I mean, you wake up in the morning. So for example, for our monks, Sanagarikas, we wake up at 4 in the morning, 4:30, we hear just what? Anicca dukkha anatta, anicca dukkha anatta, anicca dukkha anatta. Not in the words, in its meanings. So we're extremely fortunate. I really want to enforce that into your heads. Because our love for the Buddha, Sambuddha Sasana, is what keeps us bound, binds us together. And that's what brings us steps forwards towards Nibbana. Because Sambuddha Sasana means what? The path to Nibbana. Attachment in this sense isn't the same attachment as attachment to things or items or people. But this attachment is attachment to non-attachment. So the Buddha says it's chanda, not tanha. So we have to first attach ourselves to the Sambuddha Sasana to get rid of the attachment itself. So, have this in mind. And then when I was thinking about this, the next thought that came to my head is, you know, in this day and age, that, you know, many people are very focused. I mean, no, you can almost say everyone is very focused. Focus on different things, I agree, but we are all very focused. But majority of people, unfortunately, are very now focused on what? Money. Money-focused, material-focused, things. You know, I want things, I want money. The other day, you know, we get to talk to lots of people, right? And you hear, you know, I go to work every single day. I find ways to, you know, I'm starting a new business. You know, I'm doing overtime. Why? Because I'm trying to accumulate what? As much money as I possibly can. Many people these days are very money focused. always thinking about how can I earn, you know, that extra rupee, that extra dollar, extra pound. How can I earn it? How can I take and take and take and take? Very focused on money. Why? So they can get more materials. You know, I want to get a big house. You ask a child, any child, no, not our children, but any child outside, what do they say? You know, when I grow up, I want to have a big house. You know, I want this amazing car. I want to have this phone. And they're thinking about what they can have, physically what they can have. And so, you know, young children from such a young age work tirelessly. You know, so I'm not saying that they shouldn't, they should work. But they work tirelessly with no sleep in order to achieve their dream of money. Achieve their dreams of materials. Achieve their dreams on this fleeting happiness. Or these fleeting moments of pleasure. That's what they dream of. That's what they want. That's what they enjoy. And so they work tirelessly. You know, working 40 hours a week. Tirelessly. To earn, you know, a small amount of cash so they can feel happy. You know, lots of us, you know, we open our banks and check how much we have in our accounts. Right? And according to the number, you feel a different amount of happiness. You look at it and it's a big number. You feel really happy. Wow, I've earned this much. You see a smaller number and you think, oh, I have to earn and save a bit more. I mean, you know, how many people are actually very, you know, focused on increasing the number of zeros at the end? How can I get the next zero? How can I get the next zero? But what we don't realize is, you know, these are materials. These are things. The other day I was talking to a group of children and they're saying, you know, that they really want these sort of things. And what I showed them is, you know, these things can be taken away from you. You become, you know, let's say you have a big house. Well, let's take a bit of example. Let's say you want a new phone. You buy a phone. Well, if you drop it, it breaks. So what do? You protect it. How do you protect it? You put, you know, a screen protector, you put a case to protect it. However, it can be stolen. So what do? You, every day, after you come home, you put your phone into a safe. When you take it to work or school or wherever you take it to, you make sure you keep it safe wherever you go. But then it can also be affected by water. You drop it into water, what happens? Then you try to make it as waterproof as you possibly can. You know, covering all the holes, making it waterproof. But yet, it can be affected by fire. The elements can claim what is yours. The elements can claim what is yours. Wind. We know how to hurricanes, tornadoes, ripping homes apart. Taking what belongs to you. The earth. The earth can claim everything. You know, you hear, I don't get to hear recent news, but you do hear news of, you know, earthquakes, claiming homes, claiming lives, ripping people's lives to shreds. The other day I got to, one of the kids showed me their history book, and on the history book or some sort of book, it showed, you know, this is the largest earthquake was in this country. Claiming 2,500 lives. And I showed them, look, this is what the earth can do. Water, you know, the thing that is essential for the sustenance of life, what can that do? You know, back in 2004, Sri Lanka had a massive tsunami. But forget massive tsunamis, even in a small amount of water. How much trouble can water do? You're writing something. You spill water, the ink splashes over. You have a certificate. You drop into water. Now what? It's ruined. Doesn't matter the amount of water. Any sort of water can ruin what belongs to you. Fire? Now, fire. Fire is the lord of destruction. It claims, and no matter how hard you try, you cannot get it back. Fire is the god of destruction. Anything will be destroyed by fire. So the elements can take what is yours. So we're very focused on gaining something that can be taken away from us. You know, that's why, you know, people don't keep money with them anymore. We put them where? In a bank, thinking that the bank is safe. Not knowing, because we want to make sure our things are safe, that we have what we want and it's safe. But even those are not safe. We have insurance in case something happens. We have all these things to protect what we love. But at the end of the day, it'll be taken away from us. So we all work. So most people work for things that can be taken away. That's why we're very money focused. We're very material focused. We're very focused on getting, you know, becoming greater, becoming bigger, becoming the world's most best person. But at the end of the day, it's taken away from us. It can be taken away from us, and we're left with nothing. You know, if you were to put yourself into the perspective of someone who's going to pass away, put yourself at the moment of someone who's going to pass away. I don't know. Have you ever had those, near-death experiences where you do something and you almost die? Sometimes those sort of experiences are one of the most humbling experiences. Because you work so hard and then you have a near-death experience. I mean, in each and every one of our lives, we've been very close to death at one point or another. Whether it's by, you know, electricity or by, you know, almost falling. But sometimes when these things happen, you realize, well, I work so hard. I'm such a great person. I'm such a big person. But at the end of the day, it can all be taken away. So I remember, when I was schooling, I remember one day, you know, I was late to school, right? Late to school. And I had a thing that I don't like being late. Either going to school or not going to school is okay. Being late is something I don't like. So literally, I woke up late or had breakfast late or something happened. I was late to school. So, you know, I was wearing my uniform, right, getting out the door while still putting on my uniform. And I didn't look both ways and I crossed the road. I looked for the sounds. I heard sound like it was empty. I crossed the road. I see in the distance a car coming at, you know, a pretty normal speed, but for me, it felt as though it's going really fast. I see the car and I don't know what happened, but I took a step back. And the car just runs over my foot. If I hadn't taken a step back that day, I wouldn't be here. And I remember after that, I still ran to school because, you know, it's school, we don't want to be late. But I remember thinking, you know, I could have died. If I had died, what would have happened? Me working or going to school, working really hard, what was the point of that? I wanted to be rich. What was the point of that? If I had died that day. At that moment, of course, you know, being small and naive, you don't really think about these. But as you grow older, now what? You start to think about how very, very, you know, naive we've been. How very, you know, how we work so hard for so small, so trivial things. And at the end of the day, it can be taken away. You know, if we've all been near death at one point or another, when that happens, you have to realize that, you know, this my life could have been taken from me. And when it's taken, I can't get it back. Everything I own can disappear at a single moment. That's why being money focused is useless. Being material focused is useless. It's only for just 80 years maximum, hopefully. Hopefully. 80 years. No. Even if you think about it like this as well, if we live up to 80 years, think about how many years have already been wasted. 20, 30, 40 years. Only a fraction left. And yet people still work so hard for what? More material. So they can pass it down through their ancestors, you know, pass it down to their child, for their grandchildren, for their future generations. Realizing that once they pass away, they have nothing. You know, you're born with nothing and you pass away with nothing. Nothing. No, not a single cent, not a single dime, not a single pence, nothing. So what is the purpose of being money focused? What is the purpose of being material focused? And then while again sitting at this ceremony, the next thing I thought is, you know, instead of being money focused, all of you are what? Merit focused. That's completely different. Can fire take away your merits? Can water take away your merits? Can the elements touch your merits? It's like storing something in heaven, right? Now, no one could take that from you. No fire, no tornado, no earthquake can take that merit away from you. And yet, it's more precious than money itself. You see, in the, you know, some people, we don't really believe that how powerful merits can be. You know, lots of people think, you know, if I work hard, I get money. I get money because I worked hard. We forget about the merit at play. We forget about the merit at play. If it wasn't for the merits, you couldn't have got what you have. But yet, you know, if you look at it from the eyes of someone who doesn't see merits or doesn't understand merits, it seems very simple. I studied hard, wrote the test, and I passed. I passed because I studied hard. They don't see the individual small parts of it. The ability to be able to study, the ability to have what you have, books, resources, pens, pencils, the ability to not be distracted. You know, it's very easy to distract children these days. All you have to do is turn on something, right? Or just, you know, have a screen light up and they're distracted. Just make a screen light up and now they're distracted. So not being distracted, you know, even in the middle of a test, you know, you need merits to write that test. Because memory doesn't work the way we want it. Memory never worked the way we wanted. The environment doesn't work the way that we want. For example, we're all listening to the sermon, but let's say there's a massive construction site on the other side, and you hear just drilling. You hear, you know, sounds of vans and cargo and trucks moving left and right. Would you be able to focus? You won't be able to hear. So you being able to hear this clearly is what? Merits. I think it was one of my sister's friends. As they were writing their, if I remember correctly, their entrance exams to their next school. He had a wobbly tooth. And in the middle of the exam, the tooth fell out. Now, can he do the test the same way he did? He practiced at home? Can he still write the test the same way? Unfortunately, he didn't pass. And he blamed it on his tooth. I blame it on his merits. Well, blame it on his demerits. Well, you can't even say that. You can blame it on his vipaka. Whether it's merits or demerits, we don't know. But we can blame it on his vipaka. So, you know, we have no idea how powerful merits are. It's because of merits are we all put in this place. Because we have to remember, right? In this entire universe, everything is trying to disperse. Everything in this universe is trying to disperse. Come to a state of balance, right? Where, you know, entropy is zero. Oh, entropy is in high. Right, where everything is at zero energy. We're all, you know, the entire universe is trying to go to that part. However, all of us together, you know, massive, great energies being bunched together and continue to collect more and more merits. It's like, you know, it's like having a massive, you know, creating one of the most dangerous explosives possible. Because why? Energy is always trying to be released. But with our merits, we're collecting all these together. And we're trying to bond them all together until, you know, each of us attain Nibbana. But until then, we're trying to collect all of this merit power together to make one incredible power, incredible energy that is trying to disperse. This is why, you know, it is incredible. We have incredible amount of energy just pulling us together. You know, for you to be alive itself requires what? It requires merit. Because, you know, you yourself, right? I mean yourself. I mean, you know, the body that you have. It's something that's always trying to disperse. But yet your merits are what brings everything together. And that's why, you know, how very simple it is for you to get sick. So in a couple of months, we had in certain places in our monastery, we had chickenpox pandemics. It was a pandemic, right? One person gets it, hundreds of others get it. And you see how easy it is for it to spread. One person gets it. And, you know, some people weren't, they were even nowhere near. But you see that next day they have it. Someone from the opposite side of the monastery, they pops up out of the blue. Because that's how, you know, our body is always, you know, trying to disperse. That's why, you know, you accidentally hit yourself on a corner. We get injuries. Again, the body is always trying to disperse, but it's merit power that brings us all together, keeps every causes, all these causes together. If it wasn't for merits, we would have what? Nothing. So instead of being money-focused, you know, we are all merit-focused. Like I said, merits cannot be taken away. No one can take your merits away from you. Not a single person. Not a single being. Because merits are what actually truly affects your mind. Everything else is a belief. You believe it. Think about it, right? Everything else is what you believe. I believe I have my child. I believe that. Therefore, it can be taken away. To take a child away from you is very easy. How do you do it? You know, you go to the law and you say, you know, remove these two. And the law will say, from today onwards, restraining order, you cannot see each other. Very simple. Just a piece of letter can separate you from a child. You from your child. Very simple. Because that's a belief. You know, you look at your bank account and you see, you know, millions. That's also a belief. Because they can say, you know, a letter can, you can get an email the next day and say, we had a glitch in our system. You know, you had 6 zeros, but actually there's only 4. Very simple. Or even, you have millions, and the next day the economy crashes. Now what? You have 0. Or near 0 at least. See, those can be taken away. These are just beliefs. You believe that you own a car, But C4 also believe that they can own that car. So just like you ride your car, the thief can ride so-called your car and drive it to wherever they want. Because it's just a belief they have. I believe that this is my car, and they believe that they can take that car. It's just a belief. But merits? Whether you like it or not, whether you dislike it, it doesn't matter. Your karma will always come back to you. Your karma is what is something that cannot be taken away. It's something that will be with you for the end of your what? Existence. End of your existence? End of your mental environment. Until then, your merits are there. Your merits or demerits will always be with you. That's why, the first dhamma of the gatha, what does it say? It says that, your karma will follow you. Your bad karma follows you like a wheel follows an ox. And your merits follow you like a shadow. No matter how hard you try, you can't remove a shadow, can you? For as long as there's a sun, you always will have what? A shadow. Very simple. So lots of us are very money focused. We have changed money focus to merit focus. Because the more merits we have, the more opportunities we get. I mean, think about this. Was it not through immense amount of merits that you found a teacher? Was it not through immense amount of merit? Did you want to listen to your teacher? Was it not through immense amount of merit that you understood what your teacher was trying to say? And was it not through immense amount of merit that not only did you understand, but you thought, you know what, I want to practice it further and come. It's merits that keeps us in this place. So whether you're money focused or merit focused. Money focused and merit focused. See, those of you who do a job, try to see, am I merit focused or money focused? Because if you're merit focused, you're willing to stop, you're willing to sacrifice anything for the merit. So just like the Vaspinka, it was on a Thursday. It was on a Thursday, and next day was probably a working day. But yet, some of us in the morning, some of us were there since until 11, 12, collecting merits. Because why? They are not money focused, they are merit focused. I think that's what makes us different. That's what makes us different from most other people. We no longer look at how much. We look at what effect. We no longer look at how much money am I getting. No, you were looking at what effect do I make? What effect do I make? How do I affect another person? How can I make them smile? How can I make them happy? How can I help the Mahasangha? So something that my mother tells me every week I talk to her is, how amazing our Sita Shravikas are. How amazing the team is, how they work as a team. Because why? They help one another. Because they're not thinking about how am I going to gain something. If I help you, what are you going to give me? No, instead is, what effect can I make? How can I make you smile? How can I help you in some sort of way? How can I make your life easier? So something that my mother enjoys doing, especially with the Asita Shavikas, is working in our kitchen. Well, not working, but cleaning, basically, in the kitchen. Every single week, I'd meet her. She would tell me, the first thing she would tell me is, Swami Nansa, you should go and see the kitchen. You know, it's spotless. It's spotless. And she sees great joy in not just, you know, the cleanliness, but the teamwork. Because we're not money focused, or, you know, what am I going to get? How can I get? I want more. You know, are you going to help me? If you're going to help me, I'll help you. Instead, it's, you know, regardless whether you want to help, I'm going to help you. Regardless whether you want to, you know, regardless whether you are going to either praise me or scold me, I'm going to help you. That's what makes us such a great, that's what brings us all together. Merit focused. See if you're still, if you still have that. See if you still have the idea that, you know, let's say there's a sermon. This sermon doesn't say, there's a sermon by Guru Andhra, right? For only an exclusive sermon for only 30 of our devotees. Let's say. And you get a chance. But also you see, you know, someone just walking around the monastery. They have no, they don't, they've probably never heard of the Dhamma. See if your mind says, maybe I can give my chance away. Maybe I can give my chance to this person. Because, you know, I get to see Guru Andhra and listen to his sermons every day. But this person, maybe it's the first day. Maybe it's her second day. Maybe, you know, maybe this is what she needs to become Sila Shravika like me. See if you have that mindset. Let them have it. Because something that really hit me, that a point that really clocked with me, and I really want to share with you, is this idea of joy. This idea of joy. And this came from, you know, Naikanda's sermon. So I do really want to share this because I think it's a very, very powerful message. Because it's a mindset that is, for as long as you have jati, it's very difficult to do. But if you are able to see it, your entire life starts to change. And what he talked about was, you know, a mind is a mind. A mind is a mind. Whose mind? Whose mind? There's no such thing. It's like saying, you know, there's two computers, right? There's two computers. And you ask the computer, which is you? The computer can't answer that because the computer doesn't feel what? I am this computer, this is another computer. No, it's both different. They're both processing the same thing. So to it, it just feels that, well, I'm not a computer, I'm just, you know, processing here. So, you know, if I was to ask, you know, whose mind? You can't give an answer. It's just a mind, it's just a process. Now here's the thing. And this is something that he talked about, but I want to re-emphasize it. Right, this is when I have to draw. Okay, here we go. What is this? Wait, let's see if I can make this a bit better. Hold up. What is this? Piece of cake, good. My drawing is becoming better. All right, we have cake here. Now, let's say, right, we have person A eats cake. Person A eats cake. What happens? What is the process that happens? What is the process that happens? Let us zoom in, right? And we'll put the tongue in as well. We have cake, we have tongue, and then? And these two come into contact. And that sends a message to the brain, brain sends it to the mind. And the mind arises with the perception of taste. With the perception of taste. We all know that, right? You put chocolate on your tongue, you can taste chocolate. You put cake on your tongue, you can taste a taste. Perception, right? Now, let's say person A enjoys it. Says, very nice cake. I love cake. Now, we being a witness, or we being an observer, right? And there's, let's say, they're really enjoying the cake, and you see them go, I really love this cake, right? And they're really enjoying it. We as the observer, we think what? If it tastes so good, maybe can I have some? Can I have some? Now, why do we say that? Why do we want to have some of this cake? Because we want to experience the same thing that this person is experiencing. We want to experience the same joy that person A is experiencing. Therefore, we say, can I have a slice? Now, let's say we do have a slice, right? Cake, tongue, us. Would we ever have the same perception as person A? Would we ever have the same perception as person A? We're both eating the same cake, but would person A and us have the same perception ever? No, because every part of this is what? Cause and effect. Whether the cake, the tongue, the mind, the brain, all are different causes. We don't have the same causes. Therefore, the effect will always be what? Different. But yet, you think that you taste the same thing that person A tasted. And you say, yeah, it does taste nice. And you agree. However, this is not a person. This is what? A mind. We are what? A mind. Now, whether the mind is perceiving taste or whether the mind is perceiving sight, what is the difference in the minds? There is no difference. They're both just what? A mind. The mind arose, the mind passed away. The mind arose tasting, the mind arose seeing. So let's say, you see person A eating cake. You see person A eating cake. Whether you're seeing or tasting, what is the difference in the mind? Whether you're seeing or tasting, what is the difference in the mind? The minds are both very same, very similar, just different perceptions. However, we can never, for as long as we feel to be a different person, for as long as we feel that I'm separate. For as long as we feel what? Jati. We can never feel joy in this. That someone else is eating delicious cake. We can never feel joy because why? We always feel, I want to feel what? I want to feel pleasure. I must feel what? Happy. Therefore, I have to eat the cake. Or else, you can feel, I don't have cake. I enjoy seeing person A eat cake. So either you fall into one or two categories. Either you fall into, I want cake, or I, you know, let A have cake. You feel, you know, almost compassionate towards A, and you say, you know, okay, A hasn't had cake in a while, so let him or her have cake. And now you feel compassion. Again, you are trying to feel joy in someone else. But in reality, both minds are exactly the same. There is no your mind and their mind. It's just minds. So why can't you feel happy for that mind? Technically, we should be able to, shouldn't we? That mind feels pleasure. Can't this mind accept that mind felt pleasure? So instead of you saying, oh, I want a bite, you say, great. Wow, you had cake, it tastes good, good for you. Because the mind arose, felt pleasure, passed away. Now what? Now you're left with what? Nothing. So why can't we be happy for someone else eating cake? Why can't we be happy for someone else who's eating cake? Because we feel what? I am different. I must also have what? Cake for to us, so I can be what? I can be happy. All of this because of what? Jati. All of this because of an illusion. The only difference is that you believe that you're a different person, that you feel that you're different. But for the, you know, the mind, does the mind feel any different? Do these two minds feel any different? They don't. The only difference is, you know, this mind, because of Yavage. Right? Ignorance, attachment, vexation, insanity, and jati. Because this is there, does it feel that I am different? I must be happy. But this is just what? A different process that makes the mind feel to be different. But in reality, does the mind feel different? If jati wasn't there, would the mind feel different? All right. This mind is eating cake. Then say the next mind is eating. Let's say is eating. Karvila, right? Bitter gourd, right? People don't like bitter gourd. Not all, some people, right? Even though one mind is feeling pleasure, the other mind is not feeling... You see, it's not this mind feels pleasure. Mind cannot feel pleasure if there was no what? No jati. Jati is what says, it's, you know, like we talked about last time, it's comparison that's a thief of joy. It compares. You know, taste, cake. Cake, good. Cake, like. Therefore, I am... happy, therefore, mind feels what? Pleasure. Karavila? Bitter god? Don't like. The only reason you don't like it is because you've made that comparison and you say, you know, I like these sort of things, therefore I don't like this. Okay, there is a physical discomfort when it comes to bitterness. That is there, I do agree, right? But physical discomfort does not mean people don't like it. I do agree, you know, anything that's bitter automatically, say for example, when you have something that's really bitter, it can induce the gag reflex. This is how it is physically to protect our body from so-called poison and all these sort of things, the body will find a way. But that doesn't mean that we hate it. See, not all bitter stuff do we hate. You might not like bitter gourd, but you like coffee. Coffee is as bitter as oh. If you add sugar, it's not, but it is still really bitter. That's why, you know, children don't like coffee. Young children. again, this mind and that mind. This mind and that mind. We can only do that by comparing. I like this mind, don't like that mind. Because you compare. You can only compare because you feel what? That this mind and that mind are different. Now come to this moment. Come to this Pachupanna moment. Mind arose, mind passed away. Mind arose, mind passed away. Which one, which one are you comparing to what? If you're living in this moment, in this Pachupanna moment, what can you compare? Compare what with what? Taste. Sight. Taste. Sight. You can't compare. Comparing cannot happen because you are living at this moment. When the causes come together, the effect of perception arose. And then when the causes come together, the effect of perception arose. That's why for an arahant, whether you give the arahant cake or whether he or she sees a person eating cake, they don't feel a difference. They don't feel a difference. It's just, oh, okay. The mind arose, the mind passed away. Okay. You know, let's say this arahant one say is watching a person eat not cake, but eat ambrosia from the gods. Do you think the arahant will be like, oh, can I have some, please? Like, please, can I have like a drop? You can have all of the rest, just give me a drop. No, because they realize that the mind arose, perceives whatever they perceive, the mind passed away. But what happens to us? We compare. They are feeling joy. We are not feeling joy. They are feeling so much joy. They're eating ambrosia, right? Somehow they got a vial of ambrosia. And now they're eating and they're enjoying it. And now we are watching them eat it. Comparison. You compare and you say, oh, I want to be as happy. I want to be as happy. You know, it's a very good opportunity to see this in real time. Let's say some of you get a chance to do something special. See if inside you feel this idea of, why can't it happen to me? For example, let's say, Draganayakandru comes down and stops in front of our devotees and talks to one person. Can you feel joy in that mind? Saying that mind is talking, or that mind is perceiving sight, sound, that mind is thinking, and this mind is also what? Perceiving sight, sound. Can this mind be happy about that mind? See if you can be happy with that mind. That no matter what's happening there, can this mind be happy? You know, something that you find a lot is that, you know, let's say in your team meaning, if you're, say, you're Srila Shravaka, Shravika, or Srila Vasi, or whoever, or Anagarika, let's say, you know, you see someone who's surrounded by people. Right? Let's say there's one Anagarika who everyone enjoys associating. And so every single time you look, you know, someone's talking with them, someone is, you know, enjoying, you know, associating them. See if you feel, you know, why doesn't anyone associate me? Like, what have I done wrong? Because if so, you are seeing two different minds. Because in the end of the day, at the end of the day, we are all part of what? We are all part of what? Part of nature. Whether this or this, this is all part of what? Nature. Nature taking different paths. You know, energy stored in a physical form is formed like this. Energy, again, in a physical form is like this. Energy in a physical form is like this. And then, energy in its chemical form, energy in its mental form, is what makes you. You are nature. However, you are part of nature. However, says no. I'm not part of nature. I'm a separate being. I am a separate person. I deserve to be recognized, to be respected. I deserve it. Give me what I deserve. Now you look out, now you look for it. I deserve to be praised. Now you go look for it. Give me praise, give me praise, give me praise. Give me recognition, give me recognition, give me recognition. Think about it. Look how hard you work to be praised. Sometimes we work really hard just to hear the words, well done. So you can feel what? I worked hard and I got this. Again, because you feel to be separate from nature. I am different from nature. I'm not part of it. I am a very different person. No, even do you sometimes see the joy that we get when you help another person? Say for example, you know of a friend or of a family member, right, who doesn't listen to Dhamma and doesn't do any of this, and lives a very normal life. And then you go and tell them and you help them listen to the Dhamma. You gave them the Dhamma. Right? Now they're slowly changing their lives. Now they're becoming more virtuous. They're doing more merits. And then, give it another couple months and you see them at the monastery. And then you feel what? Look what? I did. This person came because of me. You don't see that, nature has taken its path. You see that, this person is here because of me. I gave this person what? The Dhamma. I gave this person the Dhamma. I'm the one who helped this person. There was a time when she was in a really bad state of mind. And I, went to her and I told her, don't worry, see it, you're going after pleasure, but, pleasure is this vexation. And I preached the Dhamma, I preached them the Dhamma. And now they're here. Look what I have done. Look what I have done. That's the thing. This shows us a completely different picture. Shows us that, look what I have done. I did all of this. I did this, I did that. It's because of me. You hear these stories. You hear lots of these stories. Some people do come up and say, it's because of me. This person came here. Because of me, that person came here. Look at what I have done. And you realize, yes, of course. You did something. Something had happened, but you've claimed it. Nature took its path. Now, this isn't to disencourage you and say, I don't do anything, so I might as well just sit back and relax. No, I want you to understand, when you do something, that it's nature. The ideas that you get. The idea of, I should help this other person. Understand that idea isn't yours. That's nature taking its path. That's an idea that, had arose in your mind according to the environment. Environment meaning you being close to the person, one, you having, the person having enough merits for your interaction,
2, you having the idea of, you know, helping the person. 3, all three things came together. Now you go and talk to this person and you say, you know, why don't you listen to this sermon? Or come with me on a Saturday and you'll hear, you know, you'll get to give dhani. All you are doing is you're just following the process of the mind. You're just part of nature. However, Jati says, no, I'm different. I get to choose. I thought, you know, this person is someone I can help, therefore I help this person, therefore they listen to the Dhamma. You know, what Jati does is something that's truly horrific, right? Jati loves making, and we talked about this before, loves making stories. They absolutely love making stories. And some people, let's say that differently. Some minds connect dots that are so far apart, but they somehow are very creative in the way they can connect two dots that make no sense, but to them makes a lot of sense. For example, right? Because what Jati does, you know, I talk to this person, it rained today. Are those two connected? But sometimes Jati can find a way to connect these two and say, I talked to this person today and this person said this and this and this and this, therefore this happened, therefore that happened, and therefore today it started raining. I mean, we say as a joke sometimes as well, you know, like this person finally came, Adhanang Wahino. And we say it's a joke, but you know, some people actually do connect these two things together. You know, I told someone, you know, you should spend 5 minutes, to go to the shrine room and chant some Buddha Guna, right? The qualities of the Buddha. And then the next day, this person gets to talk with Guru Honduru. And I think, because I said this, did they do this, and that happened to them. You're connecting random dots together. And, you know, sometimes it may seem logical, but actually it's just events. Nature taking its path. Technically, if you think about it, everything is connected, but you can't make that connection because we don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe because of us speaking today, it's going to rain? Well, who knows? All we can say is nature is taking its path. Jati is what separates them out and says, no, this and this are two different events, and this are connected. These aren't connected. Jati weaves this amazing story. Because they feel that, you know, these are two different moments, two different events, two different minds. This is why when you come to this moment, come to this very moment, this Pachupanna moment, do you realize that? No, it's just a mind arose and passed away. Something that I remember having, and I remember sometimes thinking that, you know, sometimes you have to go from the Dhammo hall to somewhere else, and it's pretty far. For example, let's say, you know, as Siddha Shravikas, they have, I think on some days you have your nyayas in the Niyamasagara. And the journey from the Dhammo hall to Niyamasagara is quite long, right? Takes about 10, 15 minutes. I remember one day thinking, you know, why can't we have like a fast forward button? That, you know, from journey from A to B, I can just press fast forward and I just appear in B. I mean, time itself would go on, but I can fast forward these boring moments. You know, we had to walk from A to B and, you know, I know what's going to happen. I'm going to take these steps. I'm going to go past this. Why can't I press fast forward and skip all that boring stuff? Because, you know, Jati doesn't like this moment. Jati hates this moment. Because Jati wants what? What am I going to do? See, right now, like after sermon, what are you going to do? So Jati makes a story. After the sermon, we have Buddha Puja, and then when you go to Buddha Puja, finally we'll be able to go and, serve some alms to some sannyasins. And Jati makes this a massive story, because Jati hates this present moment. You know, sometimes when you say a story, right? If you've ever read a book, right? I'm trying to remember the last time I read a book. And I remember something that I used to do, and I know it's a really bad habit. But usually, you skim over the really boring parts, and then you start reading really intently or the really interesting parts. Because this boring part, we don't like. Because the Jati always wants what? Wants to see what's next. That's why, when you hear a story, in your mind, the only thing that goes on in your mind is, what's going to happen next? You hang on to every word, hoping for what's going to happen next. So it's like this, right? Imagine Guru Ramadhar was doing a sermon, right? And he's preaching and preaching and preaching and preaching. And then at one moment, he just stops. Half a sentence, he just stops. For 5 minutes. In this 5 minutes, what are you thinking? What is he going to say? And your Jati isn't able to accept this moment. Instead, Jati wants to... What's next? We're always looking for what's next. Or we look at what has happened. Today morning this happened, I forgot, it's raining this morning, therefore I put the clothes outside and it's now probably wet. And we live in what? The past. Jati is you can say Jati is allergic. Is highly allergic to what? This moment. This Pachupana moment. Jati is highly allergic. Even because when the moment you see this moment, Jati can no longer be. See, when you are eating, the mind arises with taste, the perception of taste. Whether it's carrot, whether it's potato, whether it's soya, whether it's paripu, it arises with the idea of taste. Where does it arise with the idea of, in the sermon tomorrow, where does it arise like that? No, it arises with taste. Taste and taste itself. See, that's the way the mind works. That is the way the mind works. The mind can only see this moment. Can only be in this moment. But Jati is allergic. Jati will always make the future and the past. Jati will project it and say, this is what happened. I mean, this is why, because of this projection, is it so easy to live in this world because of this projection? For example, I was told the other day that there are certain companies, delivery companies, or online ordering companies, where you can go and order things like Amazon and some and other things. Sometimes they have, They can deliver within the hour. They can deliver within the hour. Now, and how they do that is, once you put something into the shopping cart, already the company is now packing it and putting your name on it before you even check out. Because, even though we look to the future, what don't we want? We want to fast forward what? The boring moments. Because the mind always wants to live in the future. Or the past. So it fast forwards to the future. The future meaning the moment that you get something, the moment that something happens. So literally they say that, some companies can deliver within the hour, within a couple of hours. Because what they do is the moment you order something, you put it into a shopping cart, already they're packing it in in a warehouse somewhere outside, packing it and, you know, labeling it, ready to ship off. The moment you press checkout, they're ready to ship it off because you live in the future. You want it with you right now. We live so far into the future, always looking at what's going to happen next. Always living with this idea, next, next, next. Or you live in the past. Think about this, right? You know, when you have a discussion, when you're talking with a good friend, think about what sort of things you talk about. You know, they say, you know, between the ages of, I think, 16 to around 30, this is your so-called golden years. Because while you go forward, these are the years that you always go back to. You know, I remember when I was 30 or 25, I did this, because this is the time where you feel the greatest, you feel the best, between around 16 to, I think it's like 18 to around 30. This is your golden age, and therefore, almost in every conversation, something in this age range will come up. You hear this a lot with parents, and they're like, you know, Buddha, when I was your age, this is what I did. When I was your age, this is how I went to school. Because they live in the past. They reminisce these past moments, thinking about, you know, past joys that they used to have. I mean, this is why we revisit the same place. You know. You've been to the zoo, right? You've been to the zoo? How many times? Just once. Once is enough. Once I saw the apes, and I saw the giraffe, I saw the orangutans, and that's enough for me. I never need to go again. Is that what happened? See, the moment I say the zoo, what comes to your head? You know, the last time I went to the zoo, I saw this baboon. And, you know, this baboon was like hanging on the tree. And already you're reminiscing the past. You're living in the past. I do not remember how tall the giraffe was. Now you're thinking, oh, the giraffe, yeah, it was so tall. I remember, you know, yeah, it's a... What color is a giraffe's tongue? Let's see if your memories are good. What color is a giraffe's tongue? Now you're thinking, ah, giraffe. I think it was a pretty dark color, wasn't it? Was it black? Was it purple? No, you're not just using your memory. Using your memory is fine. Now you're actually living in that memory, living in that moment. Because not only are you trying to look at the giraffe tongue, but you just now remember, you know, how the giraffe wraps its tongue around the leaves to eat it. You no longer, you're now using and living in the past. So that's why we revisit the place. You go to the zoo not once, but twice. And then you make the excuse, you know, your cousins came over, hasn't been to the zoo in years. Let's go to the zoo. And you're not doing it just for the cousin, you're doing it for yourself as well, to relive those past moments. I mean, this is why we have photo albums. We have photo albums of what? Of the peaks of our lives. You know, this is my wedding photo album. This is the wedding. This is the album of my first child. And you have, you know, every single moment. Why? Because you want to relive it. I mean, that's the purpose of a photo. The purpose of a photo is so you can live in the past. So you can say, oh, I remember when this happened. I mean, this is why, you know, it's like a normal thing that, you know, you go to, say, a relative's house. Like, one of the first things they do is they start opening their albums. I remember whenever we went to a relative's house, when I hear them mention album, I know we'll be there for the next 2-3 hours. Because they don't just remember the photos. What do they remember? The story behind it. I remember when they took that photo, me and this person was over there doing this sort of thing. Oh, that photo? Oh, I remember you were there, weren't you? And they are reminiscing the past, living in the past, because they enjoy that moment. I mean, that's why Jati loves pictures. I mean, nowadays we don't have printed albums. Now we have, you know, online virtual albums. And I think, you know, nowadays phones all have this ability to create albums by themselves. Yeah, they collect them together. This is these are the pictures. Without you doing it, they say, this is the picture of your last visit to the zoo. This is all your pictures of this person. These are all your pictures of the last time you were here. They create this album so you can go back and you can reminisce the past. And say, oh, I did that, I did this, I did this, I did this. Living in the what? The past. Something that Guru Nandra had explained, and I want to also explain to you as well. Is the purpose of a phone? The purpose of the phone is to live in the future. The reason we have the phone is for what? You know, people hold their phone in their hands, right? What for? What are they expecting? A call, a message, some notification to pop up and say, oh, something came. And they're living this moment expecting the future, hoping for the next moment. That's why, you know, we keep our phones. Phones live very close to us. Because we're looking for what? The next moment. We're waiting for the next call. We're waiting for the next text. We're waiting for the next notification. Living in the future. This is why, you know, Jati always looks for the future or the past. It also lives in the present. See, the present and this moment are two different things. Because when you live in the present, you're talking about, I am in this moment. For example, let's say, you know, you're looking in the sunset. You're not looking at the past or the present, but you are looking at what? The present moment. I am in the present. You know, I'm looking at the sun setting and so beautiful. So the present moment is also what? Fueled by Jati. The present moment is also fueled by Jati. It's Jati that fuels it. It's Jati that fuels that, you know, I am in this moment. That's why if you come to this very moment, this Pachupanna moment, Jati is allergic. Jati can no longer be there because where am I? When tongue and cake comes into contact, where am I? I am nowhere. I don't exist. When sight and object come into contact, where am I? But when ignorance and attachment comes into play, ignorance and attachment, vexation, insanity, Jati, now what? Oh, I am looking at these beautiful flowers. I mean, you know, everywhere you look, everything that you hear is happening at what moment? At this moment. Everything that you feel is happening at this moment. Just take a moment, you know, whenever you can, just take a moment to actually realize what's actually happening around you. Next time, you know, while you're walking on a path, going from A to B, when you're eating, like especially today, like when you're eating, try to realize what is actually happening. Food comes in contact with tongue. Taste, the perception of taste arises. At what moment? The moment you swallow it, what happens to taste? So what is taste? Pachupanna. It happens at this moment, at that moment. you're seeing Guru Hamdaru come onto the stage. The sight of Guru Hamdaru is happening at what moment? At this moment. He's not walking in the past. He's not walking in the future. He's walking at this moment. So you're perceiving this moment. See, take every moment to see what? Pachupanna. This moment. that the causes come together at this moment for the effect to manifest. At what moment? This moment. The moment you see, the moment you come out of that awareness, you now see Guru Hamdru walking from the library all the way to Dhammo Hall, and now you think that he's going to now walk to the Buddha statue to worship and then go to the stage. Once you lose focus, that's what you're thinking now. And now he's going to give a sermon, and the sermon, he's, for the first thing he's going to say is what? And he's going to end with what? The thing, we have to be very aware of our jati. Being aware of jati and using its allergies against it. Using its allergies against it. See, the opposite of the money focus is what? The merit focus. Because money focus is totally thinking about themselves. Merit focus is thinking about other people. The opposite of jati is what? This moment. In other words, it's anicca dukkha anatta. That's the opposite. So when you have venom, you have anti-venom. When you have jati, anti-jati is what? Anicca dukkha anatta. The thing, we have to practice this. We have to put this into every moment in our lives. But at every moment, what moment are you not seeing? What moment are you not hearing? What moment are you not smelling, tasting, feeling, or thinking? What? Tell me one moment you're not doing any of that. Tell me one moment you're not doing any of that. There's only one moment, but you're still thinking, but you can't really consciously think. That's when you're asleep. But the other hours of the day? So if you sleep 6 hours, the other 18 hours, you're doing either one of these things. Just take a moment and come to this moment. See it at this moment. So like, for example, on the Was ceremony, right? We're walking from the water tank all the way to Lamho. And something that I really liked was, there was these, what do you call them? I don't know, what do you call them? The flame thingy? The pandam, but what's the English word for it? It was like torches. Yeah, torch. I think that's the best word for it. These torches. And as you're walking, every time you come close to it, you can feel what? The heat. You walk past it, you can no longer feel it. You walk closer to the next one, you now feel what? Heat. Because that's all what? Happening in which moment? You see, everything that monastery does it for a reason. The pandams weren't there for decoration purposes only. When you're walking down, every time you go near one of these torches, you can feel the heat. You walk past it, you can no longer feel it. Why? Because it happens at what moment? Pachupanna moment. Next one comes up. You feel the heat. Goes by. Now what? Pachupan. Through the entire journey, every time, you know, you feel the heat and you don't feel the heat, you should remember what? It's Pachupanna. It's happening at this moment. And in every torch stand, there was an incense stick. So you could smell, and then not smell. Or the smell intensity reduces. And then high intensity, low intensity. High intensity, low intensity. Because that intensity can only be perceived at which moment? This moment. You know, every single moment, you can see it like this. It's always cause and effect. When the causes are there, does the effect manifest? Only when the flame is nearby do you feel the heat. When there's a flame, you know, 100 kilometers away, can you feel that heat? No, because the causes have not aligned. When the causes come together, do you feel the heat? You know, every time, you know, someone offered flowers. When they offered the betel leaves, when they offered the the vasi salu, the rain cloth, I don't know. English terms, I don't know for these specific Pali things. But they can only happen at which moment? Flowers can only be offered at which moment? Before or after? Present, the future or the past? At that moment. At that moment. All we have to do is we have to come to this moment. See everything in its true nature. That's happening at this moment. At the very anicca nature of things. Because cause and effect can only happen when? At this moment. Why do we always try to look for a future moment? The next moment? When it only happens at this moment. You can only hear my words at which moment? This pachupanna moment. Why are we either still in the future thinking about what he's going to say next, or in the past? What did he say? Why can't we live in this very moment? Why, when you're eating, do you see? If you're very focused and very conscious, you'll see yourself living in the future. Once you're eating, what is your other hand doing? Making the next bite. Because you are what? Pachupannai. Because you think that I'm going to have the next bite. It's not that, because you automatically, if you're not focused, this is what you think. As I'm eating, I need to prepare my next bite. Because I'm trying to live in what? In the future. And then there'll be something that you like, that you keep to the corner. Why? Because in the future, after I finish everything, I'm going to have this piece of papaya. Because why? I'm pachupannai. Because I'm living in this moment. I mean, think about it. Your mind is always trying to find ways to come to the future. To live in the future. So whilst you're eating, see it as it is. Something that I remember my teachers always telling me, something that they've told me in the past is, so for example, we get served in an alms bowl, right? And, sometimes, it's all chaotic. Sometimes you have, on top of the paripu, you have the papaya, right? Or, sometimes, so for example, on some days we have curd. Sometimes the curd goes on top of the melon. Now, some of you will be like, melon and curd, they're not a good combination. And so what do you think? Firstly, melum and curd, they don't go together, so I have to eat them separately, right? And then you have the curd first, because you don't want the curd to mix with the melum, because you don't like that. And now you're before you even eat, before you even started eating, you've already done what? Started eating. You're eating with your mind, you're thinking, I'm going to have this first, and then, today the soya looks really good, therefore I have to protect the soya so I can have some at each bite. I mean, this is what we, a mind with ignorance will do these things, because they don't live in this present moment, it thinks about the future. I can only serve once. I mean, that's a very good thing, isn't it, that you can only get to serve once. Imagine you get to serve twice or three times. Today the paripu was really good, I'm going to have more paripu. Today the melum was a bit too sour, I don't like it, so I'm not going to serve melum second time. But you only get it once. So look how beneficial that is. Now you can't choose. I'm going to have more of this, less of this. But what you can do is ration it. And you can say, I'm going to ration the paripu so it can last me my entire meal. But again, you're doing that because of what? You're living in which moment? Which moment? Pachupanna. No, you're living in the future. How am I going to protect this for my entire meal? So while you eat, see, try to become Pachupannai. Try to see things as this moment. You know, this is the thing. This is the beauty of the Sambuddha Sasana. You know, this is why we have these dutangas. Now, for a monk, we have these dutangas which we can voluntarily do, and they are there to make the environment of contemplation happen. So there's a dutanga that says, you know, while you are eating, while there's something, while there's rice in your mouth, I will not mix. I mean, to the extreme, there is that, you know, if a rice falls from my mouth into my alms bowl, I will no longer have. That's the extreme end. But you don't need to go to think that level. But at least, you know, while I'm eating, you know, I'm not going to have another prepare my next bite. Because, you know, I'm trying to live in this moment. And, you know, like, for example, our monks, we have everything in a plate, in one arms bowl, right? That's also one of these. Now, we don't do it as one, as a dutanga, but, you know, these things are there. You know, the great Arahant Kashyapa Maharatan Mahanse did these and continue to do these. For, you know, these are things that are against what? There are things that are against your comfort zones. For example, you know, there's the dutanga of only wearing robes made from cloths that covered corpses or cloths they used at childbirth. The reason they do that is so, I mean, the thing is, they used to do this sort of thing so they can have something to contemplate on. So every time they wear their robes, they're wearing what? They say what? Patisankha yoniso. Jivaram patisevam. I'm wearing this for this reason only. Because this came from what? The cloth of corpses and cotton and, you know. It's all to help one to have the environment to contemplate. To help them contemplate. That's all it is. That's why it's so important to have a teacher. And to be able to, you know, not just have a teacher, but to be able to listen and follow the teacher's words to the letter. Requires a lot of, not just merits, but a lot of determination. To say, you know, teacher, I will do whatever you tell me to do. Regardless. You know, if you say, you know, from today onwards, don't go to the Valley Mono, I won't go to them. If you say, go to the Valley Mono every day, I'll go to them every day. To get to that point is very difficult. It's very difficult. Because automatically you feel what? I am here. I can't do that. I must be doing this. I have to be doing this. So if your teacher says, you know, from today onwards, you know, do this. Jati automatically pops up and says, well, I can't do that. I am someone. I am this. I am that. And gives excuses. So to be able to completely submit and say, okay. That's very difficult. If not, you can say next to impossible. You have to be someone who's able to put their jati down, their ego down. So, you know, something that you know, when you start fighting against jati, you will win. You will win. The moment you start fighting against jati, you will win. But it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. Time will put aside, but it takes a lot of effort. You know, next time, you know, let's say something that we have in every dakine, right? You know, we have. When we go in Dakini, we have cameras, right? Sometimes I have joy of just watching the screen, because you can see how people change. The moment they see themselves on a screen, they change their behavior. Because why? They think that the camera's on me. The camera's on me. I have to be very professional. But little children, what do they see? They see the camera. They go, where's the camera? Where's the camera? Where's the camera? And they wave. And it's very funny because, you know, you can see how different people change their behavior when the camera's on them. Or when they think that other people are watching them. But who are you to be watched? Who do you think you are to be, you know, to be thought that you think that everyone is watching you? You are who? You are just a feeling. You know, when you're walking down in a line with the Buddha Puja, everyone's probably watching me. I mean, it's a feeling that anyone can have, I agree. But in reality, who's watching you? Who are you to be watched? No, you believe that, you know, other people are watching me because that's jati. And you're holding it, and so you have to. So when you believe other people are watching you, you have to hold it a bit higher, right? And if you had to walk, we had to walk in a very straight line. I mean, anyway, you should be holding a high and walking in a straight line, but not because other people are watching you, because of your devotion or your, you know, because it's neat or tidy or whatever. But if you do it because you think you're being watched, who are you to be watched? You are what? Jati, or just a feeling. See, the moment you do this, right, and you start practicing this, especially in Dakinio days. I think Dakinio days, when you're going and offering the Buddha Puja in line, and you think that other people are watching you, try to contemplate. Because what will happen is, at the beginning, it will be very, very difficult. Why? Because ego goes up, you contemplate, ego goes down. Unfortunately, ego goes back up again, you contemplate, ego goes down. And every step you take, you have this fluctuation of ego, reduce, ego, reduce, ego, reduce. And it's a continuous fight. It's a continuous fight. Every time you feel it, you have to put yourself and say, okay, why do I feel this? And then ego's back down again. The next moment you forget and you're no longer aware and ego's back up. People are watching me. Who am I to be watched? People are watching me. Who am I to be watched? It's a constant fight, constant battle. A battle against yourself. It's a constant battle against yourself. Take every moment. And this is why, you know, this is why ceremonies in the monastery are one of the best times to contemplate. Whether you are a monk, a nagarika, sila shavaka, shavika, sila huesi, devotee, or just a random stranger, it is the best time. Because you're told what to do, right? You've been told that this is what you have to do. So anyway, you're doing something, and you now have the chance to contemplate. You now have a chance to contemplate. You're now walking in line, offering flowers. Take a moment to contemplate. You've been told what to do anyway, so you don't need to think extra. So do as you're told and offer the flowers. But inside, there should be a war going on. This is the thing. Thursday's event, because it's a time where I got to contemplate a lot. And I hope you all got to contemplate as well, because events are there not just for merits. Merits are main. But underneath that, the foundation of all that is what? Your contemplation. You know, I was talking to my teacher yesterday as well. And he was telling me that he also found, you know, it very easy to contemplate while walking down and while sat down, waiting for the flowers and this stuff. Because, you know, you're told what to do. And now all you have to do is just think. Just think. Use that moment to think. Let understand that, you know, you are part of nature. Your body and mind are nature. And it's nature taking its path there. So if I was to ever think that, you know, I'm preaching to you, that's jati. In reality, this is nature at play. This sermon is not my sermon. This sermon is part of nature. These words are not my words. These words are part of nature. This is nature taking its path. This is nature taking its path. So, practice. Understand and practice. The more you practice, the further you go. But I can guarantee this moment you start practicing, you will succeed. You will succeed. I can guarantee it. The moment you start practicing, you will succeed. But all you have to do is start practicing and try to be aware. Put yourself into as many situations as you possibly can to contemplate. Because we're now in the rain retreat season, not season, but rain retreat time, we have Malvana Pinkamas, of course, you all know this, but those of you who are online may not, where we do an evening Buddha Puja and also a sermon, if I'm right? No sermon? Small sermon, small Anusasana, right? And a small sermon on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. Again, it's a very good chance for you to also accumulate merits and also to practice the path as well. So I do invite all of you. Technically, some of you don't have choices, right? Some of you don't have a choice. I mean, you know, not having a choice is not a bad thing. It does sound like, oh, you don't have a choice. It's a very bad thing. You know, you should have. No, we don't have a choice because we have to do merits. Our teachers make us do merits. They can't make us contemplate, but they make us have the opportunity to contemplate. It's not a bad thing whatsoever. It's like, you know, how parents will try to like force their child to eat like vegetables. Is that a bad thing? No, it's the best thing you can do to a child, right? Same thing here. So it's not a bad thing. So don't take it in a bad way. But you know, some of us, we don't have a choice. We have to be there. But take it as an opportunity. Even though you may not have a choice, take it as an opportunity. Because it is an opportunity of a lifetime. Well, you know, opportunity of a samsaric lifetime. You don't get as much chances like that. But remember your promise that you made, right, at the Vaspinkama. Don't forget that. What did you ask? You said, Swami answered, yeah, stay here for 3 months. We're not going anywhere anyway. But stay here for 3 months. Practice your path and help us to practice as well. So on our end, we'll do the maximum you possibly can. But the ball's in your court. Let's see if you can keep your promise as well. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Piras, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief players of chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to bending into four sentient beings. Let us not forget among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sannanse, as well as other monks resident at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transitory sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May through the power of the merits, if anything have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves in born in the blissful plane. made by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who forsake our merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, food, medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees and employees, to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's also demon transfer merits to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadevas, with Nimud's gods and deities, who have committed to protect and fulfill the sum of the sasana. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our gun deities, who keep a watchful eye over us, keep us out of harm's way. May the power of their merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors, who predeceased us, to all that have been friends and family to us, in this even long journey to samsara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those in the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war, be the friend or foe, rejoice in the merits of quiet today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, and pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this even long journey to samsara. May they buy the power of the merits, if you've never been born in the woof of plains, may they redeem themselves and born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, to resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired the other day. We have been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Ayatanwansis, Aradmihinwansis, in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired the other day, you and I, and everyone who made this program a success, become an Ayatanwansi, or Arad Mahinwase, in his life, in the era of the Gautama, Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of the Noble Chipachan be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer the blessing to you. Raga ginnen midetnva Dvesha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Raga ghini niveva, dvesha ghini niveva, moha ghini niveva, nivan sepa labeva, nivan sepa labeva. Nivan sepa labeva. Tunrangi, Susyananda Mahaguna Belim, Sri Loka Sri Satyama, Nibbana Paramasukhin, Suvitharayata.